All right, well, welcome back, everybody, to episode 15 of the HRO Adventures Podcast. This is Dave, and I'm here with Rusty. Rusty, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dave.
You literally just came in off the boat, didn't you?
I did. I like that. Just came in off the boat. It's literally true. Yep. I got to go salmon fishing down on the Brewster Pool this morning.
Brewster Pool, okay.
That was pretty cool. Yeah, me and Preacher Dave got a guided trip, as you would say.
Wow.
The guys that were going to be our guests today were, since they were coming to do the podcast, it was a good reason to go fishing.
Perfect.
Or they were going fishing, it's a good reason to do the podcast. Yeah. I'm not sure which way it went, but
exactly.
Anyway. But yeah, so they took us out. And
great.
Yeah, we got a couple of sockeye. We had a great morning.
All right. Absolutely. Good, yeah. Fantastic. I saw the pictures, and it almost reminded me of Alaskan combat fishing. There was quite a few boats in line up.
Oh,
there.
Yeah. The way Brewster kind of does it, it's between the two bridges, the Brewster Bridge and the bridge over the Okanagan, and that's where everything pools up. And so all the boats are in like a, I don't know, what is that, about a 3-mile square area? I don't even sure it's that big.
Around three, maybe five if you get to go down to the well.
Yeah, if you went all the way down, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's a pretty tight little spot. And, you know, what Preacher Dave and I thought was a lot of boats, these guys said it was half of what was yesterday.
That's crazy. So. I know every turnout between, is it Blue Lake on the way up?
Oh, yeah.
Blue, yeah. And then, yeah, as they made that turn, every turnout had multiple campers, boats, multiple bank fishermen. Obviously real popular. That's great that people are out. So before we get into our guests, last Saturday, so about a week ago, the big beautiful bill was getting ready to come up for voting, and the Utah Senator Mike Lee, who's tried to sell so much public land as one of the options, it fell through. He wasn't able to get the right support, ended up backing out of the bill right before it got voted on. And so, you know, kind of a win for public land and public outdoors and hunting, fishing, hiking, you name it. So we just kind of thanks to, you know, Randy Newberg, Cam Haynes, a lot of different companies
did a full press. Ike had a lot of stuff out on it.
A full press, and people called and complained, and I think word got to them.
Yeah, it did.
So it's a huge win coming out of 4th of July, kind of another, you know, freedom and rights getting stepped on and whatnot. So
it is
kind of neat that that is. And the senators in Idaho and Montana, New Mexico really pulled out the stops.
And it really is. And it's really it's really going to be a battle going forward.
It's not going to go away.
You know, there is quite a debate over, you know, the government owning land and how they manage it.
Is
sometimes they've got a black eye over the years of how they've managed and taken care of their land. And so there is that section of the population that's against them owning and managing land. And yet in our state, Fish and Wildlife has been very, very aggressive in the last 5 years of purchasing, buying ground. And so they've always had a little bit of that going on, but they've gotten very aggressive here lately in the last decade of doing that. So,
and just remember, as taxpayers, we are public landowners.
Absolutely.
Is one way to look at it.
But, you know, those of us that, you know, on my ranch, you know, all of my leases are on private ground, and we've talked to landowners and different things. But when I don't hunt here, I go elk hunting and everything, I'm on public land just like everybody else.
And we go to other states.
And other states, absolutely. And so you want to be able to have that balance, and you want to have that, or we're going to lose our heritage. We don't need it to be all purchase. The DIY guys are still the grassroots.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's how a lot of people get started and stuff.
Absolutely.
So, like Randy Newberg said, take a victory lap, but it's time to hunker down and get ready for the next submittal of something.
Yeah, this was just a battle. This was not the war.
Yeah, so just again, go out, enjoy them. That's the whole premise for this, right, is to go out and enjoy the outdoors, but also we got to kind of fight for them too. Well, without further ado, why don't you introduce your guests?
All right. Well, like I said, we've already kind of gave them a soft entrance as we talked about going fishing this morning. But yet we may end up telling a fishing story or two, but that's really not the point of the whole podcast. The guys that are here today are Dan and Brett. I don't have mob names made up for you guys yet, so give me time. But Dan has been guiding for me for several years on the pheasants. Yep. So when guys come and don't have a dog and or some of these, well, like Tour of Duty, we talked about last podcast, Dan has made a name for himself there. So everybody that listened to podcast 14, you know, now all of a sudden
you're the infamous Dan.
This is the infamous Dan that Cortland talked about for 2.5 hours. So. So that's. But we had already planned before we even talked to Tour of Duty. And some of that came out of the golf tournament. All my support, Hidden Ranch Outfitters, going to support the deal was all because of Dan. Dan called me up and said, hey, you know, he stays in touch with Cortland. He goes, hey, there's a golf tournament. And I'm going, oh, really? What's up with that? So that's how the conversation started. And then it just grew into us sponsoring a hole and going down and sitting there and talking to all the golfers and everything else. And so Dan has been really a great conduit between Cortland, the Tour of Duty guys, and Hidden Ranch Outfitters. But the reason Dan's here today is because he's a guide for the pheasant hunting, and we have not had any guides on here. We want to talk about how that works, but we get a lot of questions. I get a lot of people asking me, you know, do I sell dogs? Do I train dogs? And all of those things. And so that's kind of what we want to get into it. And that's where Brett has come in. Dan and Brett have begged me for, you know, most of my life to do some wild chukar hunting and some wild huns. And I've always just worried that I didn't have enough. And I think we've talked about that a little bit on the podcast. I don't ever want to overhunt anything. I always want to have plenty of game to hunt, even whether it's deer, chukars, or whatever. And so during deer season a couple of years ago, I couldn't hardly hunt the breaks of the river because I kept getting screwed up by these stupid chuckers. And that's putting it nicely.
I think you had a few more choice words.
I had a few more choice words. And come to find out, so do chukar hunters. They have words that I don't use commonly. So, but anyway, I saw a lot of chuckers, so I gave Brett and Dan a call the next time that they came up. Actually, I think you guys came up and pheasant hunted, and we started talking about it. And I said, guys, there's a ton of chuckers down here. Go down here. You guys take this year to learn the ground, hunt it a couple of times, and find out, can we guide? Can we offer a wild chukar hunt? Not only to guys that have their own dogs, but to guys that don't have dogs anymore, but still want to hunt chukars. And so I kind of had it in my mind. I showed them on Onyx Maps. We kind of split it into two sides. I told them, I said, okay, let's go down here. This is the easiest place to go first. We'll take you guys down here. Here's all the water tanks, all the water holes. Here's where I saw them. Well, on the drive down to park their truck, we ran into, I don't know, 50 chuckers, two complete different coveys. One group was right at where we parked the truck at the water tank. And so they were already excited. And so then from that point, I was pointing and saying, look at these landmarks. And here's these tanks are down here. And this is north and south. And these guys have hunted all the breaks of the Columbia before, never over here, but other places. And so they know the terrain.
Okay.
And I turned them loose and I said, okay, well, go forth and find out how many chuckers are out here. And they came back. They called me. My first text came with about 35 minutes. Okay, you have plenty of chuckers. We've determined that.
You have a chucker problem.
Yes, it could be coming down to a problem. And then the next text was about an hour and a half later. We have quit shooting chuckers because we're going to limit out too quickly. We need to go look at everything. And then about, I want to say about 3 hours, you guys were done. And they came back and I says, okay, well, so how many did you see over the lake? Well, we didn't make it over to the lake. Well, how many did you see down here? Well, we didn't make it down there. Well, how many did Rusty? We only hunted this one little area for 3 hours and there's chuckers everywhere.
I love it.
So it was kind of fun. And I'm telling stories I want you guys to tell. So I got to shut up. Well, so they
hunted about the huns too. Not just chuckers. You got huns too, which
Dan gets excited about huns.
I have real a soft excited. Spot.
There. And these are the Hungarian partridge.
Yeah,
right?
They're beautiful. Yeah. If you ever get to see one,
we have seen a few.
We have seen a few. So I kind of jumped off the deep end, like I always do. Dave always reminds me. You guys, so it's Dan and Brett And Brett's better half, Candy, is here listening. She we're not getting her on camera this time, but we'll
she
get her.
She catered the podcast.
She did cater the podcast. That's right. We get lunch out of this deal. But I want you guys to introduce yourselves. Tell, you know, how did you get involved? How do you hunt? And then, you know, your dogs and things like that. And then we'll go from there. So go ahead. Okay. Dan, go ahead.
Well, Rusty sadly has known my family for 60 years.
Wow. Like
that. Pretty close.
I actually shot my first pheasant on the preserve here way back when. I
won't say how. Before Rusty owned it.
Yes, when Mr. Pitts owned it.
And, really? Wow.
And the pins were built, some of the pins were built by my dad. He has a fake tooth.
Because of it.
Yes. from Mr. Pitts. So it's, I've been up here a long time. Hunted, love hunting. That's my dad was a big fisherman and then he got me hooked into hunting and that was a mistake because I never wanted to fish anymore. I wanted to go run around the hills with my dogs. So
you fish when hunting season's closed?
Pretty much.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. As soon as September hits, I'm gone. Nice. So that's, and then, for guiding, I was up. Rusty was lamenting that he didn't have enough guides and I was like, well, I can guide. And I've always wanted to guide my whole life. I think I had a third grade essay saying I wanted to guide. And finally got the opportunity. Rusty gave me the opportunity and it's been crazy ever since. We've been,
oh yeah,
we've added a lot.
Yeah.
I get to be the experiment.
There you
a
go.
A lot of times. That's fun. Which is fun.
And Dan worked his way up too, because I already had two other guides that were working for me pretty much whenever I needed them, though, you know. But we got into a couple situations where I needed that third guide or even, you know, and Brett's found out that there's times now I need a fourth and fifth and sixth guide. Yeah. And so, so Dan's worked his way up. He was the junior guide for a long time, or not a long time, maybe a year.
Yeah.
And then,
yep.
Well, then all of a sudden my other guys, well, that's a whole nother story.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then Dan goes, I'll take everything they won't take.
Oh, yep. I love it.
So we pushed it. Oh, yeah. I pushed him a couple times, said, okay, do you want to go tomorrow? Short notice.
It's in the driveway honking.
Yeah. So, but yeah, so you kind of worked your way up.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And the tomorrow one's a, I have bird flu. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's pretty good. Yep. And you're an engineer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Technically a chemical engineer, but wow. I do controls and automation. So.
Oh, very cool.
But yeah, I think I have a brain. I try to explain that. No, I don't. I chase little birds for miles and super calorie negative.
Yeah. And so to move on to Brett here, Dan told me he had a friend and I went, no.
But there's only a couple of
there's
us.
Yeah.
They're two of them are here right now.
Yeah.
Brett and Candy. Okay.
Pretty much. Yeah.
They're endangered species.
So Brett.
In danger for sure, but also in danger.
So how long have you known Dan?
So I know Dan since I moved out to the west side or the east side of the state here after I finished law school and got a job practicing out here. That's about 11, almost 12 years ago now.
12 years ago.
So we've been hanging out for a while. Met Dan out shooting at the club at Ephrata of the Gun Club. And I was on the board there for several years. Nice. Stepped back from that and we've just been kind of hunting and hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Because you've been coming up to the preserve. But well, as long as Dan has.
Yeah, well, he was crazy enough. Everyone asked me for more spots, and I give him a spot. There's one spot I give to everyone. It's well known. I'm not afraid to openly say Steamboat Rock. I make everyone go there, and if they go there and try it, then
no.
the journal is yours.
There you go.
I guess, an adult onset bird hunter. Okay. I grew up fly fishing, big game hunting. We had labs, sometimes shot some ducks, occasionally some quail. There's no pheasants in Nevada. there just aren't. We don't have the habitat for them except in a couple select areas, and they get okay numbers of pheasants there, but nothing like up here. So I sort of switched over once I got the dog and got serious into bird hunting, hanging out with Dan too much. Dropped big game. I haven't gone deer hunting in, what was it, 8-9 years now.
Wow.
It's been a while. Wow. It's been a while. Because it eats into my bird season. So it's not fair to the dogs.
But as we talked about on the boat today, the hunting's coming back. I have hope for you. It's coming back and the big game hunting, and maybe even will influence Dan one of these days.
I keep trying.
My season starts the 1st of September and runs to the end of February. It is very, very hard for me to give that up.
But if you got ground in Nevada, well, first of all, one of my other guides loves to hunt Nevada.
Yeah.
And he's got friends down there. And Dan's been trying to become friends with him. You know, because he has chucker ground.
I would for access to that ranch he has access to. That is prime chucker habitat down in Nevada. Something?
Yeah.
Man. Million acre ranch.
Yeah.
Man, it's nice stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So great. So how did you didn't have dogs all along, but you've had dogs
forever.
So did you just start after you met Dan?
Well, I've had dogs. They just were never trained for hunting
because we didn't hunt birds. Oh, I gotcha.
We hunted deer, mule deer mostly.
Right.
But I got up here and against Dan's advice, I got a lab because I was used to having labs and I know how to train retrievers from having labs and training them to fetch ducks. So I started out with that and I turned my lab into an upland dog. And
oh, cool.
Great 7 years with him until cancer got him a couple years ago. And
now
I moved on to pointing dogs. Now I've got a wire hair. Her name's Abby. She's full German genetically, so she's a little different and spicy. Different than an American bred wire hair.
Yeah.
And I've got a Weimaraner puppy I picked up last year who's going to be going into her second season this fall.
Wow.
Very cool. That pup is showing some promise.
She is. She's going to be a rocket.
Yeah. Yeah. She's a lot of fun. She's a lot of fun. So, Dan, tell us about the guiding. Tell us a good story about Cortland since he told about you all
there
the
time. You go.
I don't know.
So guiding's fun. You get to mix it around with a lot of different people. It's kind of fun seeing all the different personalities that want to hunt. One of my favorite recent hunts is the actual bachelor group.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we'd heard about that.
They were, it was entertaining for me because they were a mix of Chinese, Japanese, Laotian.
My company,
I go to China once in a while for. So for me, it was kind of fun seeing that different culture and stuff, seeing the diversity.
That was a very diverse group.
Yes. Yeah. And then Cortland's group is just fun. Ex-vets, you cannot have a filter. And they have a thick enough spine to take it. So it's awesome. That group, Cortland does great work there. I always love supporting them. Yeah. Funny story about Cortland is he Colorado mule deer hunts with a guy I went to college with.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Cool. Small world.
Yeah.
Yep.
Small world.
So, yeah, like I said, the big thing, I just like seeing all the different groups. And it's fun seeing them have success.
Yeah.
A lot of them, there's the guy who hunts all the time, and there's the two buddies that never hunt that want to get into it.
Yeah, the guy that sucked them in, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Hey, it's just one beer.
Yeah.
sorry, Brett.
There's peer pressure.
So it comes with peer pressure.
So that's my fun. And I get to run my dogs a little bit longer. I mean, preserve seasons right now, I run until March, April.
Okay.
So pretty much my dogs only have like 2-3 months of getting to relax and lay in the backyard. Mm-hmm. So it's been awesome.
And when you're guiding, when you guys go out on the preserve, one guide and one dog to how many? How many can you hunt?
Up to four. Okay. I've done five and I've stretched it and I've actually taken other people's dogs with my older dogs to help train them. I'm one of the few ones that will kind of allow that.
It's just you and one other.
So a basic setup would be somebody come out to do the preserve and you get a guide and a dog and basically four of you, probably the right size.
Yeah. I bring three dogs with me.
Do you? Oh, okay. Wow.
We do 4 hours, but mine's a loose 4 hours. Wow. I say if I wasn't here, I'd be doing this anyway. So
yeah, exactly.
I just get to do it with birds I know over here instead of having to try to find them myself.
Cool.
Yeah. And Dan, all the guides will go more than once. I mean, if they pick up a bird and they doesn't get hit and they see where it flies off and lands, they'll go after
it. Sure. Yeah.
Starts stretching your hunting area.
That's what I figured. Yeah.
That's where you start wearing out dogs after 2-3 hours.
And hunters.
Yes. And hunters. And Dan's had hunters that have said, okay, we're tired of we're not good shots.
That's why you're walking so much.
So we don't need to chase the ones we've missed because that's just stretching us out farther.
Yeah.
You know, and Cortland mentioned that too, that even him following along, we have one tour around mm-hmm. to see what we can pick up and then go after the, yep. the leftovers okay. with the yep. quarter or the guy or two that can handle it. So
and always trying to help the client too, like if they have issues with their guns or
yeah, sure.
or something. Yep. You see them miss three, you take them off the side and go, okay, let's
yeah.
Here's how you mount it. Let's practice yeah. this.
What yeah. What so, setup are people running as far as shot and choke tube or what's the like people
so I suggest
at home listening can kind of see if they've got the right inventory to get ready.
So my backup gun for everyone that comes out is what I suggest for everyone. Mm-hmm. It's a 12 gauge 870 IC or a mod, run sixes on the preserve birds, nothing crazy, and you'll cover yourself on the okay. preserve birds. Towards the end of season you can get may need a little bigger shot, but Rusty takes great care of these birds.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They're not like a wild bird.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty good. That's yeah. what I was guessing. Yeah.
And
most setups, especially in the 870 realm, come with at least one of those options.
Oh, yeah.
You can grab them off Amazon real easy yep. too, right?
So, yep, exactly.
So yeah. They make Carlton and all those.
Yeah.
So. Okay, cool. Excellent.
And Dan's another one of my guides that most of my guides, guys will show up here. We've had guys show up here with guns that are not functional.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I figure and as so much. That just kind of comes with it, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it does. And because they just don't hunt enough and those kind of things. And that's fine. That's one of the things we offer here in Ranch Outfitters is come and shoot some preserved birds mm-hmm. and have some fun. So Dan will actually, you know, let them borrow a gun or, exactly. or whatever just okay. so we can make mm-hmm. sure we get these guys out in the field and so
or,
that they can
or fix theirs.
Yeah. or fix theirs if possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so and when we had a little bit of that with some of these bigger groups, mm-hmm. with the bachelor group. With that particular bachelor group, that was one of the times that Brett came. Was because we needed four. I needed four guides all for just the one group.
Yeah.
Because there was 12 of them. And so 16
guys.
Yes. Yeah. And so we had you yeah. and Darren and Kevin, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And if Brett didn't make it, you were gonna borrow one of my dogs.
So yeah. And now that means we were scratching the bottom of the barrel when I was gonna start guiding. So
yeah. I'm at the bottom of the list.
There you go.
Yeah.
Just right above Rusty borrowing Dan's dog.
Brett has moved up. No, Kevin was actually the bottom of the list. You were one step above Kevin.
Okay.
So but Kevin will guide, but only when Kevin's not working, when he's not
available. Or grandkids.
Yeah, because this is a different Kevin.
Oh.
The one out of Moses Lake. Because he.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, that Kevin. Okay.
That Kevin. And so so Kevin's really, he's the honorable mention guy. I mean, honorable he only comes in when I really get in a pinch and when I really need somebody. And so, he's a great guy too. But so. So when you guys are guiding these guys, how many questions do you guys get about your dogs?
Oh, they want to know everything about our dogs. Yeah. And I'm happy to talk about my dogs. I love my dogs. I love talking about my dogs.
I've never seen a guide that wasn't.
Yeah.
And I've had people ask, is it okay if I ask him about his dogs? I says, yeah, it's like asking a guy with a car collection. Can I ask you about your car?
Exactly right.
Or a parent about a kid.
Yeah. Or a parent about your kid. Absolutely. You know, if you start going, oh man, I love your kids. Oh, they'll tell you everything about mm-hmm. them, you know? And so when you guys start talking about dogs, give me some of the main questions that you guys get.
Oh, Lord.
How old is your dog?
How old?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are they inside dogs?
Yep. Do your dogs live with you? What do your dogs do when you're not hunting?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do they want to know what breed you have? Do they care about the breed?
Yes.
Sometimes they'll ask, but we both run pretty recognizable breeds. I mean, the wire hair and the GSP are go-to pointing breeds.
Pretty popular breeds.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially for upland birds.
Yeah. Yes. People call my Weimaraner a lab. I think she's a silver lab with a docked tail. I've gotten that a couple times.
My solid liver male gets asked, oh, that's a lab. I'm like, no.
No,
he actually knows how to run.
We actually used to run his liver male GSP with my chocolate lab.
Yeah.
Ran the, I don't know, what are we going to call it?
Hmm?
the proper gentleman combo.
Oh, we got to run the flusher. The Southern Plantation.
Southern Plantation.
So we did that.
The pointer, and then the flusher comes in and kicks it out.
Yep. And then his flusher and my really old pointer, they worked great as a team.
I bet. Yeah.
In fact, actually, she never really learned how to retrieve because she had a lab around. And she's like, oh, I know how to do that. Bye.
Yep.
That's part of the
he'll do that. Don't ask me.
Yeah.
That's part of the neat stuff with hunting with dogs, right? Is people like to see the dog work or want to know how the dog works, right? I've done in the South run deer with hounds and stuff. Yeah. So I mean, I've seen, you know, that stereotypical, you know, you got five or six hounds out on the leash and they yip or call and they go left or right, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then I've done some stuff in, I would say I hunted in Europe, but I've been with people that ran, you know, fox hunt stuff and seen how all of a sudden it's a very prim and proper operation, right? It's not the same as in the South where they're doing it. But I think people, there's a, you know, duck hunters and upland birds, there's a interest in the birds, right? There's an interest in the shotgun type of stuff, right? You get into the side by side or the two triggers, it gets a little, it can get traditional, right? You don't see a lot of, you know, home defense kind of stuff coming out. And then I think the dogs, right? Yeah. There's just so many facets to anybody that comes out that it's pretty cool. And I think somebody finds something that they like.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And there's people eyeballing, like, I think I want to get into running a dog, right? You know, maybe not hunters, but but we had a cousin who ran labs, but the lab got a fever when it was little, so it lost its hearing. So the lab would go out, turn around and look, and he had to do hand signals, and it worked great. But I was like, wait a minute, I didn't even know you could do that. But this thing would go out, you know, I don't know, 20 yards, and then just turn and look back, like, what now? And he would give, you know, whatever. And it was a mate, and it worked. And it was like, holy cow, I never even knew that was a thing. So it's pretty cool.
A guy I knew at the one of the gun clubs, he did that. He had a lab, same thing.
And had no issues with firearms going off, obviously. But yeah, it was the neatest thing, except for he would turn around and look back. And, and he was very well trained to do it. So, I mean, if you like dogs and animals and stuff, right, it's just neat. So, well, since we're on that, what are the breeds that you guys like to run? And then why do you pick some breeds versus others when people like usually assume a lab is the bird dog, right? But but you have to have been around real pointers and things to find out how much more effective they are.
Yeah, I can go first. I am a GSP nut.
Okay.
I like big running dogs. I am a crazy guy. I want my dogs at 200-300 yards. My big male, we put 90 to 100 miles on them in a day. And then my little female, my smaller females, their field trial line, the one of those field trial lines, so we put 60 to 70. She just goes, okay. They're just crazy. I'm a GSP nut. I've also ran mixes, some lab pointer mixes. And I love English pointers. I love big running dogs. But they have to be steady. So that gets into the training portion later.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
What are some other options?
Well, for me, I mean, I always grew up with labs. We had labs, we had ranch dogs, we had rescues, but I always loved my labs.
Yeah. So how did you, what made you choose? You made friends with Dan, but then you chose the German.
Yeah. So, part of the dog you get is what sort of birds you intend to go and chase. Labs can chase birds. They can chase upland birds. You got to be able to keep up with them, or you got to have them really well trained to stay within range of you. For pheasants, probably can't beat a lab or a springer or some other kind of flushing breed that's going to just love being in thick, dirty, heavy cover in water and swamp.
French Brittany's and stuff Brittany's like that. Work.
Yeah.
I like the labs because their coats are pretty much bulletproof for that. You don't spend an hour combing them out like I do with my wire hair after a pheasant hunt. She ends up halfway bald by the end of the season from the burrs that get cut out of her. Switching from pheasant hunting, which was what I primarily did when I moved out here because we have such great habitat, public land, and it's preserved so close to where I live, so easy to come out and do. That's why I went with the lab. Hanging out with Dan too much got me hunting chuckers and huns and quail a lot more. And Lab was good at quail. They were probably his favorite bird. I remember going through the slough or the wasteway down there putting up a covey of quail with him. He caught one in his mouth on the flush.
He did, huh?
And brought it back, a little quail head sticking out of his mouth. Quail fully alive, unharmed. into my hand.
I believe it.
I almost felt bad keeping it, but still legal harvest. So switching to the other birds that don't hunt and don't live in heavy, thick, dense cover. Chucker live in cheatgrass, rim rock, hills, steep terrain. I wanted a dog that ran out further and would stop when it found birds and wait for me to get there because I'm slow.
Okay.
So that's why I switched to the pointing breeds now. Versatile dogs, GSPs and wire hairs are what people call versatile dogs. They're supposed to be able to do anything. So wire hair and a GSP should be able to go do waterfowl. You should be able to take them and do upland. They're a little more pushed towards the upland side of bird hunting, though.
Okay.
Yeah, well, the wire hairs can do a lot of waterfowl. They're really, really good waterfowl dogs. His female is amazing.
They have any of the attributes that the labs have, like the webbing?
And, oh, yeah. Yes. They all do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wire hairs have a nice, good double coat.
Okay.
Yeah. Abby is in love with the water in a way that I don't think anyone will ever understand. Because we'll go pheasant hunting and it's 12 degrees out or 15 just degrees.
Go, right?
Yeah. Everything's froze up. She'll find a small patch of open water and decide to go swim.
Yeah. She identifies as a lab. I've decided.
She identifies as a seal.
Yeah.
Take her out swimming at the lake or something, just hucking bumpers, not really doing any training or anything. Yep. Yeah. Can't get her out of the water.
Just can't get her back. Yeah. Well, yeah. You talked about burrs, and I know there's protective equipment you can even buy, right? In addition to radios and stuff. Do you guys do anything with telemetry or radios?
He got me hooked into GSP.
Yeah.
GPS collars.
GPS for the GSP.
Yeah. Nope. because my male would run 300 yards and he'd be over the next ridge.
I was just going to say out of sight, right?
Yeah. We could hear him. So we'd have to try to get in, be listening to the beeper go.
Yeah, it's cool. But there's some cool stuff out there. So,
yeah, he's got several stories of why he now has protective.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I run vests on my dogs, nylon vests. And if we're doing cold waterfowl hunts, I'll run neoprene vests on them.
Okay.
Help keep the wind off them. It's not that the vest keeps them from getting wet. It's that the vest stops the wind from blowing through their hair and pulling body heat out as fast.
Okay.
And then the nylon vest, Clay, when he was 2 years old, we were pheasant hunting. He found a hole going full tilt through a field and cut his chest open.
Mm-hmm. I've seen some punctures and stuff.
Yeah. He punctured himself because there was not going around stuff for him. It was going through stuff for him. And Abby gets one too because she's punctured herself running through thick bramble.
Now, here on the preserve, you know, we're hunting cow pastures.
Yeah.
So how does that work with the vests?
So I
went through these fences. I mean, we try to do individual pastures, but like badger, there's a cross fence right through the middle of it.
This is where he and I differ on our training. I don't run protective vests because I want them to learn from their mistakes.
Yeah. My dogs are just too dumb to learn from their mistakes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
They can go through barbed wire. They get some scratches, but nothing bad. They can run thick cover, but they realize that, ow, this hurts. His dogs are a little bit tougher. I don't know if that's a good word choice, but a little bit tougher. And they go, oh, this is fun. There's still birds here. So he has a little bit different choice than I do.
Yeah. So you get by with the vest. The vest doesn't get in the way. Still more positives than negatives of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I prefer to run with vests if we're going to be around stuff that's going to poke, stab, or rip. Uh-huh.
Both of you run GPS collars?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I run the Garmin GPS collars, Alpha. 200i is the control transmitter I'm using, and the receiver collars that go on the dogs. I'm running two of the new Alpha 25 collars.
And you can do more than one dog with your portion of it, right?
Yeah, so
each dog wears a collar.
That's the difference.
So Dan runs the Garmin Pro 550 Plus, which can't handle as many dogs as my collar system can. I think you can run up to 200 different dogs on the Alpha 200. Oh, yeah, I think he's limited to three. And I can even break dogs into teams. So if I, for instance, had a kennel where I had, 10 pointing dogs in there, and I wanted to run them in braces of two. I could just set the controller up so when I wanted to pull those two dogs, I'd have a team for them, and it preload all the training commands or the training stim in there
for them.
Perfect. Yep.
That's great.
Yeah,
now, call it $1,200 setups for the whole thing.
Yeah, if you look at the 550, it's a little cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not the craziest price, right?
And it's got the easier buttons. Mm-hmm. That's why I use it. It's only got like four buttons. Perfect for me.
Yeah.
I'm kind of a tech sort of junkie guy, so
that's a neat way to combine it. It's a lot of tools.
Yeah, a lot of tools.
I got the 200i because Candy wanted to make sure I had an SOS button. So instead of getting the InReach,
that helps.
Spot and Ranch, nice. It's built
the
into
the
DeLorme
and the InReach stuff when it first was out. And
Well, you get on some of this nasty terrain. You break a leg, rough.
And I mean, you step out the door and you're off the cell grid, right? So having a iridium backup's not bad.
That's a really cool idea.
Yeah. The other was back when the Alpha 100 was the Garmin one with the display. Onyx was making chips.
Oh, okay.
And the Alpha 100 would take the Onyx chips. So we don't just hunt locally, we go out of state and
that's really good.
That's nice.
Every once in a while. So having the chip was super helpful for stuff like that.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
They don't do it anymore. They assume your cell phone's going to work everywhere. You're going to download everything.
That's the thing. Everybody's starting to assume their phone works everywhere, and there's still places it does not.
The phone is the default because we all have one.
Exactly.
So. Yep. Now, do you guys, did you learn put this together from a having your dogs trained somewhere, or did you do your own training?
So I learned all my stuff from my father.
Mm-hmm.
He got I want to say a lab English mix. I forget what her breed was, but her name was Spunky. She was Spunky. And he read the gun dog book. What's the name of that book?
Walters. Gun Dog.
Gun Dog.
Yep. That's how I learned myself for training. So I had my dad in this, and then Brett's went a whole step further.
Yeah, so I started with, of course, that same red book, Walter's Gun Dog. There's also Water Dog for more water-focused stuff and retrievers. And then another book I found was Training the Hunting Labrador Retriever. That book is focused on building a dog for hunting and chasing and harvesting birds, not building a dog that's going to be able to go run tests or anything like that. You're not looking for the same stuff.
Right.
On top of that, I got involved with NAVDA, North American Versatile Hunting Dog Association, and hooked up with another guy through there who was a professional trainer. I spent about 3 years training dogs with him, training my dogs, his dogs, his clients' dogs. We trained a whole lot of really nice dogs, some that went on to the NAVDA Invitational Test and passed, some that went to the Invitational Test and didn't quite pass. They were all very phenomenal dogs.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. So your guys are doing mostly all your own training at this point. Yeah. You guys don't send anything out.
I train my own dogs. Yeah. We train our dogs together.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
What a fun way to do it too with your buddy, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely. Cool.
I never thought about it that way, but
that's the best way to do it.
That would make
support.
It really fun. Yeah.
Now, you know, because we have five or six guys at Hidden Ranch Outfitters, I have those that do field trials. I have those that don't do field trials. Mm-hmm. And where do you guys run in that?
I train hunting dogs. I don't train a field trial. I do stuff similar. We've debated on some of my male. He's my love of my life. he's our stud, and we've debated on doing field trials with him, and we've just never done it. Brett would handle him. I would not handle him. I screw him up sometimes.
Okay.
He listens to me.
Yeah. I'm dad.
He listens to Dan too, but
works with kids that way too.
Yes.
He just likes me better because he doesn't have to live with me all the time. I don't know.
And he gets spoiled rotten by your wife.
He does.
Mm.
he comes to visit and stay the night and gets his blanket up on the bed.
A fireplace with wood crackling.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He comes home and goes, Dad. And I go, tough. But I personally train hunting dogs, so that's I have three completely different levels of dogs, three different things depending on what I want to do. I have an old female that never really went through fancy training other than how to recall, sit, and kind of stay. She does what she wants. She's old now. But she's a phenomenal hunting dog, especially for pheasants, because pheasants don't play by the rules. And so she's geared towards pheasants.
Any male dog versus female dog? Any pluses, minuses?
Oh, yeah. We have a split opinion on that one, too.
Yeah, there must be something, right?
You have two dog trainers and they have split opinion.
Yeah.
Who would have thunk it?
Exactly.
Yeah. I prefer males. Okay. I like males because they're hardier. They can run. As long as their balls are still attached.
I was just thinking they hadn't been snipped yet, have they?
Yeah. I have my own kennel, so I breed and stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
So I like them. You can run them harder. They recover faster.
Okay.
Brett differs, but.
Yeah. What do you see with female?
You know, my lab was a male. I've had male and female dogs. Yeah. Right now I have two female dogs. And I like the girl dogs because they seem more biddable earlier. Male dogs, you get that little rebellious streak when that testosterone starts pumping.
It's awesome.
The girl dogs just seem to be able to take training faster, younger, but every dog is different too.
You're
gonna have male dogs that are on schedule, really want to please you, they're really biddable and cooperative.
Right.
So when you were looking, you would look at the dog specifically to make a decision. There's no hard and fast rule that you would go female or male or something.
I don't like to mix intact dogs of different genders in the same house.
That could be something.
Especially when they're different breeds. So my male lab was neutered. My female dogs are not.
Okay. Yeah, so. He's not a breeder. I am a breeder. So that's where.
That seems funny because, you know, I hear Brett talk a little bit about the field trials and doing some training that way. And you're saying no, just all hunting. Mm-hmm. I thought that being a breeder, you wanted ribbons and plates and
it helps.
And stats.
Stats. Yeah, there you go.
It does help. I do an NA. I've started doing NAs on all my pups that I keep myself just to prove to potential clients that, they can do this.
So the NA test is NAVDA's sort of first level test.
Okay.
It's a puppy test. Your dog has to be less than 16 months of age to run in it.
Okay.
It's got three components where they judge the dog on five things. There's a field portion, a track portion, and a water portion. That's it. It's just to see what your dog's natural instincts are.
Okay.
Very minimal training going into that. You need to do some training. You can't just drop a puppy into an NA test you can and hope the best.
You could.
It's probably going to blow up.
Yeah.
So there's some training that goes into that, but mostly the judges are looking at how your dog compares to the standard just based on its own natural instincts and abilities and genetics.
And would it be the standard of that breed?
Standard for a versatile hunting dog.
For a versatile hunting dog, for a GSP or something.
Yeah.
Okay. GSPs are evaluated against the same standard. Wire hairs are poodle pointers, English pointers.
It's all the same.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah.
Very cool. So you do the basic test so that they did pass something for the.
And then by reputation, I have a very high reputation for hunting dogs.
I see.
The joke is Brett and Candy made this joke, and it's an honest to goodness truth of my pups. I built a 1,000 horsepower motor, put it in a stock suspension, and forgot about the brakes.
Sounds like a good dog.
Dan also favors the field trial lines dogs too, though. Those dogs tend to be a little closer to unhinged.
Okay.
Because that's what they're looking for in those. And those dogs in field trials are competing against each other.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There's no fear there.
Oh, yeah. 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 And that's, I love that. Mm-hmm. I want, like I said, 1,000 horsepower, forget about the brakes. Let's figure this out.
I love it. We talked about the vests and stuff. What about snake stuff? Do you guys train against snakes? Do you do any of the courses, or what's your thought? Again, thinking of listeners maybe come from the western side or from down south.
So if you're
would like to get involved in this.
If you're an experienced dog trainer or you have access to one that can help you, you can snake break your dog. If you're not a very experienced dog trainer, it's a way better option to go to one of the clinics offered by Get Rattled or something. Yeah,
had a few friends do those and it was all very positive. Yeah. So
I'm going to advocate for taking one of those courses outside of Washington, because in Washington you can't possess a live rattlesnake for that. Mm. So most of those snakes are dead or taxidermied. In Idaho, you can have a live snake and they will tape its mouth shut. Your dog gets the full experience of hearing, seeing, smelling. And I think it sticks better.
No, it makes sense.
And
yeah, it does.
The audio alone would be a huge thing for a dog, wouldn't it? Yeah.
And it is
with
for
that
me.
Hearing. Yeah. There's no mistaking what that is. Yeah.
I got kind of lucky with Abby, particularly. Yeah. She is adverse to anything that looks like a snake. It is a snake.
Yeah.
She does not
does
like
it come
snakes.
Up much? Their nose to the ground kind of thing or whatever. Does it come up?
I'm 99% certain my dogs have seen snakes. Like Abby, do not like snakes. They can live their half of their life, and I'll live my half of the life, and we can never meet.
So not a reason for somebody to not get involved or be a little overwhelmed or panicked by it.
Just, there's
ways to mitigate it, but it's probably not as common as you think.
And always carry a leash. You can always do it in the field.
Yeah.
I've done it several times in the field. It's not as much fun. You kind of got to mind your P's and Q's a little bit more, but you can do it in the field if you had to.
If you make it work.
Huh, okay. And then the vaccine.
Yeah. I was going to say there's a vaccine issue.
Yeah.
And you can do all that ahead of time, verify where it's at and how to get it.
Yeah. The rattlesnake vaccine that covers the species of rattlesnake we have here, the initial inoculation is 2 doses spaced 1 month apart.
Yeah.
I just had Mika's first one done. She's my Weimaraner puppy.
Okay.
About 2 weeks ago. She gets to go back here in another 2 weeks for her second one. Mm-hmm. I've done it with Abby since I got her, and I did it with
give you an edge.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, it gives your dog a better chance because if your dog gets bit by a snake, the best thing you can do is get it to a vet as fast as possible.
Yeah.
And Benadryl. Carry Benadryl.
Yeah. Benadryl helps. Yeah.
So is it a liquid form?
We just do the pills.
You do the little purple pill and you get your dog to take it, huh?
Yep.
Just go in through the tooth or
peanut butter.
Peanut butter, okay. So you got to have peanut butter now with you.
Yeah.
There's stuff you carry in your pack all the time.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Little prepackaged peanut butter packets. You see it like the grocery store.
Yeah, it's probably a reward somewhere along.
Throw one of those in there because you might want some peanut butter sometime too when you need a quick bit of fat and
that's
sugar.
A great tip for people to go research and figure it out.
But I also carry sticks of honey. To give the dogs if they start
what a great idea
getting a little down and I see they're losing their energy, give them that, take a rest, it comes back. And after a strenuous hunt, within about 30 minutes I'll try and give them a high calorie snack, because I don't feed before we hunt to avoid drawing blood towards their intestines away from their other muscles.
Lethargy, right? They'd be ready for a nap.
Well, in the lab that you had, we had to worry about the stomach
thing. Bloat's a thing. Super common in very large dogs, super common in labs. So the best way to avoid that is not to feed before heavy activity,
right?
To feed at least 2 smaller meals a day instead of 1 larger meal.
What are you guys feeding your dogs like at home?
I'm a Diamond High Energy. I can get a 50-pound bag still for a reasonable cost, and it less poop, which I am glad with.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Do you feed Diamond too, or do you go?
Yeah. So I start puppies on Pro Plan, Purina Pro Plan.
Okay, yeah.
There's a lot of data and research behind that food, and the added stuff in there helps with brain, eye development, muscle development. Once they graduate from that, it's either a Pro Plan Sport, or I've been feeding Inukshuk. We switched off the Pro Plan Sport. I like to rotate food, not crazy often, maybe no more than once a year.
Okay.
We'll switch off to another type of protein source, and I don't do it during hunting season.
Yeah, don't change anything during the season.
Right.
Because it takes the dog's digestive stuff, bacteria, a while to
sure
get
does,
accustomed to the new food.
Yeah.
So you'll see issues if you try and swap during season when they're burning more calories.
Right.
Inukshuk, the stuff I'm feeding now is crazy dense in calories. I don't even feed the densest one they have. This was designed for sled dogs running the Iditarod. So
I don't remember the name of the food. Yeah, pretty popular one though. And it's for performing dogs, for hunting dogs. And when that guy left me Tucker, you know, and he left me the bag of food and said, here's what I feed him. And this is what you do. And he told me how much a day and everything else. So that's what he was on. So that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I started doing research and figuring out, you know, why am I doing this and how is this supposed to do it? Because that was part of Tucker's deal. No breaks. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, he was a big dog, German wire hair, ran everywhere, 110 miles an hour all the time. And, you know, there was no downtime. And when I switched over to the diamond,
mm-hmm.
There was actually a sigh from me and from Jackie, because it just, when we were hunting, we were still okay.
Mm-hmm.
But when we weren't hunting, we were still okay.
Yes.
Because, you know, after raising cattle dogs are, there's a lot of similarities between cattle dogs and hunting dogs, in my opinion. They both bred for a job.
Mm-hmm. They're high drive working dogs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No quit. And when they're not just working,
just like a Malinois,
it drives them crazy.
Yeah, they need an assignment.
you got to give me some work today. Yeah. You know,
the horse healer is a board healer.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And so, that's how I kind of made the switch, was because I'm going, mm-hmm. okay, I think there's a food issue going on here. We're just feeding him some high performance stuff, mm-hmm. and he doesn't. I'm not hunting every day with him, you know, and he rides in my truck, you know, and I don't walk 70 miles a weekend. Okay.
Right.
And so there was that whole thing that we just needed to slow down just a little bit. And so, but the diamond worked good.
Yeah.
Diamond's great food. I've fed diamond before too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Costco, actually their food used to be manufactured by diamond. Not sure if it still is, but made in the exact same plant.
It's not the high energy one.
No, good. Not the
it must high be energy. For regular dogs. Right?
Yeah.
High energy just means there's going to be more calories in there because there's more fat and probably a little more protein.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feed the same high energy food all year. I moderate the amount of food my dogs get to keep them from becoming overweight.
Yep, right. That'd be the way to do it.
Because that is the problem with that high energy food is if they're not burning it, they're holding it.
Yeah, the worst thing you can do for your dog, if you want a nice, healthy dog that's going to live a good life, is let them get fat.
Yeah.
Dogs should be a little bit lean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they should be lean.
Rib bones are okay.
Rib bones are okay. I know, right?
To a point. I mean,
at the park and somebody will say something and you're like, no, they're fine. That's what they're supposed to look like.
The one thing I do is I try and add a little bit of weight on to my dogs going into the season because they burn through it fast.
Get them prepped. Yeah.
When we were really grinding with the lab with Clay, I was feeding him about 6 cups of food a day.
Oh, wow.
Of high calorie food. He was eating ballpark 2200 calories a day.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
How big's the dog?
So Clay was about 90 pounds back 90
pounds.
Then.
Okay.
He was an enormous English or American lab. Not like the English ones that are a little stockier.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was big and leggy and just friggin' huge.
Well, and you got to remember too, hunting here on the preserve and hunting, you know, the wild ones here.
Yeah.
We're hunting cold weather.
Yeah.
This is
it's
not
an understatement.
I'll say sure.
Okay. Well, it's cold to me. I got a coat on.
It's cold.
Yeah. Early September, early October, it's hot.
It's warm. When we first start.
It's hot. The guy who gets that season pretty much exclusively because I have the GSPs, it's hot.
Yeah.
Water is your friend. Dunk eggs are great.
That's true. And we hit it a little bit in April. It'll start warming up.
Yep. March, April, we get it again.
Yep. But we because of the preserves open all the way through, we get those that week stragglers. Of -5 to -10.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you guys are still going out. This year, when we were hunting the Chuckers, we had to go below the snow.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we had no access below the snow. Oh, so we were coming from the top down to get to the birds.
So is this like a booties and stuff have to go on? Or
so
how do you regulate that?
I don't. This is Brett and I differ. I like my dogs tough enough.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a soft person. I jiggle when I walk because I'm not in shape, but I'm not.
That's not the soft we're talking about.
Yeah. I like them to have calluses on the good hard pads and everything else. And I don't have the issues. My dogs with my line of GSPs, they have really tight, small pads. So I don't have the pad issues that Brett has had. So I don't wear booties, but there are times in the ice when we have the crunch, the ice on top of snow, that I'll run booties on my dogs. Just so they don't get scraped up.
That's what I was thinking, just scratching and.
If they break through,
yep.
then we'll start seeing that we'll cut the bloody the bloody cracks, and so we got to be careful in that.
So I my dog's pads get tough. I keep them tough. We condition before the season to make sure we're not going to have injuries that are going to put us out. But my dogs have been larger than Dan's dogs, so I've added protective footwear to them in the ice.
For that
ran boots on the lab a couple times when it was bad because he was punching through stuff harder and deeper than the other dogs
and
were.
It's jagged, and,
and he was getting cut up, and it was gonna become an issue. So
put you out of commission, then wouldn't it?
It's a long commission sometimes.
Those are full of blood, and they heal at funny rates, right?
Booties or vet wrap. I've done vet wrap in the field if I've noticed something going sideways and we're like not near the truck and I didn't remember to put the booties in pack.
Duct tape.
Duct tape.
I make my own out of duct tape and plastic bags.
A little bit of vet wrap, then plastic bag, and then duct tape over the bag vet wrap.
More vet wrap over the plastic bag than duct tape.
So let me ask a question to you guys, since I'm kind of segueing into this. If somebody was to come to Hidden Ranch Outfitters and hunt the wild chuckers, whether it's with you guys or without you guys, what should they expect here on the wild huns and wild chuckers?
Phenomenal bird numbers.
Yes.
I love that.
You're going to be able to eat that the thick prime rib at the end of the day and not worry about gaining weight.
It's a walking program, right?
It's a hoot. I personally like the huns better than the chuckers. Everyone wants to chase the chuckers.
You've almost gotten rear-ended because you stopped in front of me.
The number, as Brett said, the numbers are crazy high, very dense. And potentially we have more areas this year, hopefully, that we can get access
to. It's looking good. So.
The last couple of years have had good bird numbers.
Good hatches.
Great hatches.
You know, great survival rates.
Yes.
We've been lucky with the weather. Because of the ground that you have access to, Rusty, they have access to water. Which is a limiting factor for your chucker population. There is a ton of water in your ground, which is why you have so many.
Well, and that water, you know, we have some runoff, you know, and we may touch a little bit into the ponds that we're opening up. We opened them up last year to do-it-yourself guys and to guided hunts. We have the ponds for duck hunting and stuff that we're offering. But to focus on the huns and the chuckers, we have, you're going to be, we have a good number, but the cattlemen in this area, in a lot of my leases in the last 15 years have done a really good job of spreading the water out. They have put in some pipelines and some tanks. And I want to say that the landowner that, on the breaks of the river, that is the number one reason why that number has increased. Is because that's where I see them when I'm hunting down there, is those birds know where every one of those tanks are. And you know, for a mule deer hunter, I could sit at a water tank and shoot a chucker.
There are guys that do that in the early season because when chucker opens in October and it's too hot to let your dog run around. Go sit by water and wait. They will come to you.
They will come to you, and then they
do. Funny how that works.
It's fantastic.
Well, and the cattle guys have been doing great on the habitat too.
They've
been managing their pastures and stuff really great. That's been helping a lot with the birds.
Well, now tell me the fire that came through and burned off all of our sagebrush. That was a devastating hit to the mule deer. Because that was their main stay. But what was it to the birds?
So that
positive or negative?
That first winter would have been a positive because they're being green up, but then it would have been detrimental.
Okay.
After that.
Yeah, after fires, chucker will find and concentrate in what is left that didn't get burned, the little pockets of sage that's left, or rim rock. Chuckers need that habitat. And then
you have too many on that one sliver, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and then in the West here, we've got this problem that's called cheatgrass. That's one of the chuckers' main food sources.
Really? I didn't know that.
Cheatgrass. Cheatgrass greenup is a great place to find chucker during the season. So we'll get some precipitation, then we'll get a little bit of a thaw.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Or a freeze, and then a little bit of a thaw.
Well, now that makes sense to me. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it makes sense now, right?
Yeah.
I've seen it. Never put two and two together.
Never did. Yeah.
There's a reason why there's those group of clients that say, hey, Rusty, I want to go chucker hunting. I can tell him. this week are the best ones. And he goes, well, they can't make it those 3 weeks. Okay, then this week. Why, Dan? Just trust me. There's a reason.
There's a reason to have a guy go with you.
We've learned that with everything, right? There's a reason why the deer's there or not there.
Yeah.
Or
well, you know, we had one client last year, and he was bound determined that he was going to take his dog. And he goes, I says, has your dog hunted chuckers before? And he goes, no. And he goes, but it's been probably 20 years since I've hunted, but I now have a really good dog. And I want to go hunt these. And I said, well, here's the thing, you know, in my opinion, I would hire a guide. And if you don't want him to take your dog, that's okay. But I would hire a guide to make sure that you go down. And one of the things that you guys helped me with when we set this up was nobody hunts chuckers alone. So everybody that goes over there either has a friend with them. So there's two people to hunt because it is going to be your cell phone may or may not work. And so you need to have somebody there just for safety reasons. Yep. And it's always more fun to hunt with somebody anyway. Yep. And so anyway, he came and his buddy couldn't come. And so he calls me up the night before and he says, okay, I'm still coming, but I know you said I couldn't come alone, but my buddy can't make it tomorrow. So what am I going to do? I says, I don't know. And I says, you can hire one of my guides. And I said, but he's not going to drive up here for free just for you to go hunting. And I said, so you're going to pay the guide fee?
Oh, I would have for that accessory.
I did know that. So I may have implied that most of my, in you know, those that have sanity, not just insane like you. But yeah, I knew that you would. But anyway, I just told him. And so he brought his wife. And so his wife kept tabs on him and walked around with him and as he hunted and everything.
Well, that's cool.
And 4 hours later, he calls me up. He comes back to the car, which where we have them park, they have cell service. So he goes back to the car and he calls me up and he goes, okay, just want you to know there's a lot of chuckers over here. And I'm sure that it would be really fun if you had a dog that could help me shoot the chuckers, because all I saw was chuckers flying away at 150 yards and chuckers running up a hill at 150 yards. And he says, I could not get close. And so from that time, he's hunted with us another 3 times since then.
He's been out with the other Kevin, not with me.
Because he never brought his dog back though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He did hunt with Kevin twice. I think he's hunted 3 times, twice with Kevin and once
by himself. Yeah.
And they got into birds and they did okay. And so he's learning. And he had a blast. Awesome. He just had a blast. He called me every time and said he had a good time. Now, you've taken a father and son duo a couple times.
Yep. And I've taken a single guy out with his dog.
Yeah. That's right. I forgot about that one.
Yep. I did that one.
Yeah. Yeah. So how did that go?
It went fine. I'm fine running with other people's dogs. They just have to know that your dog won't. Most likely will not get in the birds. And if they screw up the points, we're going to have to figure something out.
Yeah.
So we're not going to screw up your opportunity.
Right.
If you're fine with that, that's fine. Just know that.
Most should be, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just want to let you know
that. Got to start somewhere.
Yeah. If it's screwing up opportunities, we're going to have to talk.
Yeah.
We're going to figure something out.
You're going to have to keep yours on a leash while we hunt.
Yep. But I haven't had a single issue with any of that.
Right.
Now, the father and son, that was the time that you guys had to march clear down the snow line.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had, and I forgot my e-collar that day. I will admit, the guide pulled a bad card and did a bad move, and I...
There's those that have and those that will, right?
Yep, yeah. Yep. I was,
and those of us that keep extra...
Exactly. Yes, lesson learned.
Because his buddy is not the smartest.
or, you know, sometimes you just forget.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Keep busy.
Yep. Yep.
Every hunter is not hunted enough if he hasn't forgot.
Once. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was a rough day. We had, what, 3 or 5, 6 inches out. It was a lot of snow up on top here.
Yeah. I think it was like 8 or 9 inches on top. And then you guys had to go find the snow line to get
and
to
find the birds. Yep. And I drive up here. So I was leaving extra early in the morning. Mm-hmm. So I was in a rush to get up here and made him. Forgot
and
that,
they were staying here at the cabins.
Yeah, and we almost got stuck going up into it.
You did get into the parking area. Yeah.
But we went down the snow line and we had 200 birds in like a quarter mile square patch. And it really messed with the dog.
I bet.
That's the problem if you want to bring your own dog and they've not had contacts with very, very large coveys of birds. It's going to blow their mind.
I can only imagine. Yeah.
You'll see that look on their face like, oh,
now what?
Well, I think you used the term like bird drunk or something like that when you told me.
I have heard that.
Bird high. Yep. All my dogs.
Eyes roll back and glaze over.
Oh, yeah. Do the spin.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, Rusty's got a lot of chucker.
But you guys shot your, from the time you found the birds to the time you were done hunting was what? 20 minutes?
No, we didn't get limit that day.
Oh, I thought they both got limits that day.
Day before we got a half limit each. They each got a half limit of huns.
Okay.
We had a little rough morning, leading into the storm. Everything was moving around. And like everyone has alluded to, I love huns, and there's several coveys that Rusty has that I know if I walk in this field in this general direction, We'll find it.
Nice. Yeah.
And so I have my little honey holes that when days are going bad,
that's awesome.
I take them up in there.
Well, and then to lead into that, that's going to lead into this year being better. This is just going to continue to get better for us because last year was really our first year of doing the guided wild hunts. I told Dan, you know, I said, man, there's this one set of bottom ground that we have. And I said, there's huns down there.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, that's like telling, you know, an addict that there's cocaine. To
drive out there in almost a foot of snow.
I did it.
Sounds like
we made it out there. We made it out there.
All the accessories, like a new vehicle.
So, you know, but Dan went out with that father and son and didn't see any birds.
Wow.
And I was like, what?
Yeah.
But Dan goes, but they're there.
They're there.
We're gonna hunt this because that is a fantastic spot. Because I don't think you'd ever hunted it before.
No,
had you?
No, that's usually where you'd go deer. I'm not. There's the polite rule.
I do protect
rule.
Those until November. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dan cannot hunt until after November 1st,
which is actually great for me because I like to travel to hunt, and I travel in September.
Okay.
I have some uncles. That's
true. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
September and October.
Yeah, you guys are in Wyoming and
Oregon, Idaho, Nevada.
Yeah, you know. And now with Darren's contacts, you guys are going to be in Nevada a lot.
My brother-in-law used to be a game warden down in Nevada.
Oh, okay. That's a good brother-in-law to have.
Right, no kidding.
And I grew up there, and we were outdoors. So
And that's a beautiful. I love hunting Nevada, but that's a whole other story. But as far as hunting here, we've got. We're finding new areas to hunt.
Correct.
We're hunting new areas, and we've got places to go.
And for honestly, for the beginner hunter, when they come out here, November's the best time.
Oh, it is.
October's hot. Yeah. I mean,
and it's not super cold in November usually.
It's beautiful. Usually, It's the best month out here, I think. And
so we're doing good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fantastic. And I like the shooting preserve in November.
Mm-hmm.
If I was to pick and say, you know, if they could only come once and only come, November would be
ideal.
Mm-hmm. Would be, you know, December would be the second, because it seems like when we get those super, super cold snaps, it's, you know, January, February. And then I can never outguess the snow in January, February. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we have a lot of, there's a reason why some guys hunt the preserve is because they just can't hike as far as they used to. But they love hunting with their dog. And so we can concentrate the birds for them and get them a good experience and still hunt. But they don't like post-holing.
So you get into that
16 inches of snow and your dog is running 100 miles an hour on top and you're doing the whole... You know, you get 100 yards from the pickup and you're going, let's go back.
Yeah.
It's not fun setting birds in that weather either.
No, but, you know, and then, you know, I don't have tracks on my side by side.
No, you don't.
Get birds out. Tracks for it.
I cheat. I pull my brother's tractors from the farm and I come and I make a nice little track around. And then when I post hole, I take the bird and I'm driving on, you know, a trail.
Oh yeah.
And then I run 20 yards off the trail and put the bird. And if it's Dan, I run 40 yards off the trail. So.
Well, just huck it out the back like a football.
Yeah.
Something
throw a grenade and throw it.
Yeah. Don't leave him anything to work with. No sun on the ground for the dogs, you know.
Yeah. Wear your boots backwards and put the footprints going the wrong way. Yeah.
Or he just calls and goes, hey, Dan, the side-by-side's out back. You can just go hitch up to it.
Oh, yeah. Fun. And that's actually happened a couple times. I've had, hey, Dan, I'm not going to be here today. You just go put your own birds out. Catch your own birds, put your own birds out.
And then it'll be 3 weeks. He goes, I need to talk to you. And I'm like, yeah, we do need to talk, Rusty.
I love it. Well, guys, we are slowly, or not even slowly, rolling up on our time.
We are.
But I think the takeaways are November's great for the preserve. There's people listening that are super interested, have never done this. It's a safe place, super understanding of people that have never done it, run by guys that love it and would love to share.
Right.
So,
right.
Dan, what's a great way to get a hold of you through the HRO website or something if people want
Rusty,
to start?
I'm also on HRO Adventures because of the wild birds. I think Brett and I are the only two that cross over on those.
Yes.
So reach out to HRO Adventures. Mm-hmm.
So there you go, Brett. You've already moved up to second.
Here we go.
Wild hunts. There you go. You know, I forgot about that.
Yeah. but reach out to HRO Adventures. You know, questions are okay.
It's okay
to bring your dog. Yep. Take some coordination.
Oh, yeah.
So no surprises, but...
And for those of you listening to the podcast...
very willing to work with somebody who'd love to get involved, but knows nothing about it, right? Yep. Or very little.
Yep. If you go to the website and HRO Adventures, you know, or Hidden Ranch Outfitters, you're going to see Brett and...
Yeah, okay.
And those... It's their pictures that are on there for the wild.
Yeah.
Brett's our mail.
Just trying to, you know, we've worked with places in the past where, I mean, there's a level of expectation and they're not there to tutor you, right?
Right.
And so
we
want to make sure people understand we've got the great facility, we've got the great preserve and the location, great people that can go up or down depending on what your level is and get you an adventure.
They can work with you at your level.
Yeah. We're there to help you have a great time.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Not always the case when you get a guide, right? So,
right.
Yeah.
Well,
so it just, unique.
It just dawned on me, Dave. You know, it's not part of the podcast at this moment, but a lot of those pictures on our website are thanks to Candy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's taken a lot of those pictures and put them on there.
Staff photographer.
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you. To go with these two guys checker hunting and take pictures, I feel sorry for her.
Yeah.
So I don't want to take her place.
Yeah.
I love to take pictures and go hunting, but I'm not following these two crazy.
Oh, she doesn't.
She's got a really great lens on her camera.
Yeah.
Especially for some of the ground that we checker hunt up here, your ground. It's got a good central ridge that she can get on. And
oh, nice.
You can see pretty much everywhere you're hunting on that side.
And it's a beautiful view.
The whole place is a beautiful
view. You can see 10 miles.
Oh. You'll enjoy the view. Yeah.
Well, one of the guys that Dan took hunting is a friend of yours and mine too, Dave, Pete.
Oh yeah, and you got to experience Pete.
And when
he was the very first client actually for the wild birds.
Awesome.
He was one of the wild checkers where these guys first started cutting their teeth 2 years ago. When I took Pete down there, you know, he says, "Oh, this is where, you know, my daughter needs to get married."
I remember that. We were in the truck.
And I says, "Oh, every daughter wants to get married at some cattle trough down here on the side of a hill." So I don't know, but I will say this. It is right. It is scenic. It is a beautiful view.
It is neat terrain, having been in like North Platte, Nebraska, and other bird places. This has got some terrain features just, it's an amazing place to.
Yeah, it's
to
more like the Badlands.
Yeah. It really is.
Like North Platte, that's flat. It really is flat.
Well, so, great. So somebody that's seasoned and done it and wants to run their dog, great. Somebody that would love to get into working the dog and stuff and just would like to come out and get some tutoring and some training. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So reach out to HRO Adventures and Rusty, and you got a place you can, you know. No prejudged, you know, kind of level. Just come out and they'll analyze you and figure out where you're at and keep you safe and have fun. So well, we got to dive into your calendar. How's your calendar?
Hey, you know, I have felt kind of stupid the last couple because my calendar seemed a little boring.
But
only to me.
Sometimes there's stuff going on. Sometimes there's not.
But this
is going to get busy here pretty quick.
It's getting busy. And one of the things that's coming up I'm just excited about, and we've talked about it here on the podcast too, but it's happening finally. Probably within the next, it'll happen in the month of July. So within the next couple of podcasts, we will have our, we will be working on the shooting range.
Okay.
And so, like we said, if you come and you stay at Hidden Ranch Outfitters, we're going to put up a kind of a lean-to covered area. We're going to have a pad down so two to three shooters can all be at the same time. We're going to have three benches in there in the lean-to. And just from some of the contacts that are the guys that are working with us, Cortland and some of the other guys that are long range shooters and stuff.
What kind of distance you think?
I've been playing with the Predator guide, Kelly. He kind of picked this spot. And so I've been working with it. And he's one of the ones that's helping out. I got a really good team that is that has put me in place. So it's not just Rusty being some kind of a crazy dude thinking like we can shoot over here. They are very safe. They know what they're doing, and what they're doing are keeping me in line. But it looks like we're going to be able to reach over 1,000.
Nice.
And we're going to be able to shoot at least a 45 degree from the shooting pad. Mm-hmm. And very safely into shooting backstops in a natural setting.
You got some really cool new armored targets.
We got some new
stuff.
The Boulder Creek stuff came through, and so we've got that. In fact, I need to get that up.
Yeah, we need to get that up.
We need to put that on the YouTube channel.
Yeah,
putting those together and shooting them. So there won't be a lot of shooting this summer because it's so dry. We can't.
Yeah, we don't.
We don't need to be shooting AR 500 steel at 1,000 yards and then watching smoke rise.
That's kind of cool.
Well, it would be cool. I just don't want to talk.
Tannerite? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I really don't want to talk to the fire chief when he comes by. And just park the truck out here. Yeah, exactly. But it looks like we're going to be able to put in 1,000 pretty easy and maybe go over that. And then with the dead nuts targets with Cole's been a great one to work with. We're getting some new targets. Awesome. In here, so that's going to be exciting.
So that'll be for the archery guys. You got archery range, shooting range.
Yeah. The archery range, I can put it up pretty much anywhere around here, around the cabins. Mm-hmm. But I knew it would happen. You know, Cole's given me, you know, and he's helped making me an outfitter and everything, with them. And I appreciate that. But it's costing me money, Dave. I'm just telling you. We're just buying more and more targets.
It all costs money.
I'm helping Cole out.
Yeah. Because it's a great cause, right?
The California guys are already going, hey, where do I get my dead nuts target? And when am I going to get it? And so they're all excited.
We need the Rusty Hunt Signature Series. That's what we need, right?
Ooh. I like that
idea.
Yeah. HRO Signature Series.
HRO Signature Series. I like that. So a mule deer with a brand on his left hip.
There you go.
Maybe that's too much cattle in there.
Or a chucker in front of it.
This is the West.
Or have a chucker walking by.
Brandon chucker.
We are still into the dog. Okay.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we got to wrap it up here.
Yes, we do. But so I'm going to be excited working on that.
That's awesome.
And we're just getting things ready. You know, we're less than 2 months away from archery hunting.
Very cool.
The deer are showing up. I'm looking at some nice deer and the you know, I walked through the pheasant pens the other day because we're starting to, the pens that I'm getting ready to turn pheasants into, we've already grown some new stuff. And, you know, we've talked about that a little bit. The gates have been wide open because I'm just walking in and running sprinklers and planting and growing stuff. Shoot, I was walking through there the other day, you know, and it's probably just over waist high. Some of it's probably chest high, some of the kochia and stuff that we have in there. I just was going to move the sprinkler, and you would have thought a rattlesnake bit me.
Wow.
Stupid fawn, doe that lives right around the farm over there. She had her fawn laying inside the deal, and I almost stepped on it. And then, of course, it's not tall enough. It's not waist high. Mm-hmm. So that thing jumps up and starts moving through the grass, and all I see is grass moving like 2 feet away. And pretty soon I could see the ears showing up. And I got my breath back, and my heart went back into right rhythm. And I'm telling you what, it scared the snot out of me.
Oh, yeah.
So, but yeah, that it was kind of cool. Kind of cool to see. But yeah, the deer are showing up and moving. And
that's very cool. Out. And
so be careful driving through the country. I'd like,
yeah,
there were, I'd like you to leave me a few. I've seen a few on the road
this morning. There were a few on the road today. Yeah. Yep. Been out. Well, from the hunting cabins, how do people get a hold of you?
Well, let's stay with the OG.
Okay.
HiddenRanchOutfitters.com is the one that we want most people, everybody to go to. Okay. You're going to start seeing the changes. I saw some already showing up. Landowner Ron, you know, also runs the website, and he's been updating.
Yeah.
And so the updates are starting to show up on the internet now. So you'll be able to see those. We should be able to start taking reservations here by the end of the month.
Oh, wow. Okay.
On the website. We should have all that in place. So, yeah, my calendar is full now.
It's getting full real quick.
Very, very exciting. Very exciting. And I love getting the chicks. But, you know, now here we are 2 months in on the oldest ones. And the youngest ones are, in fact, I get another set here next week. But we're turning them out.
Mm-hmm.
And that is always... It's exciting to see them as chicks. It's exciting to see them when you're turning them out into the big fly pens. And it's just, it's just a good time to be an outfitter. So,
thanks for having me out.
Well, thanks for coming over, Dave.
Yeah. Thanks, Brett and Dan, for coming out and talking about the dogs. And
we're in the cabin. We haven't been in the cabin for a month.
It's been a while. It's been a while.
Better get a picture of the barn.
What's that?
Better get a picture of the barn.
Oh.
Yeah, we've joked about how many pictures we have of the barn. Yeah,
yeah,
everybody has pictures of the barn.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, hey, from the hunting cabins and HRO Adventures, I'd like to thank everybody for listening. Thanks, guys, again, for making time to talk about the dogs. And we'll wrap up episode 15.
Sounds good. Thanks for coming.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Thank
you. We'll see everybody on the next one. Thanks again.
Yeah. Thanks.
Be safe.
Bye.
All right.